Bears Robert Crane, a Microsoft Office 365 MVP who knows practically everything there is about Office 365. He does stand-up events talking about Office 365. He writes about Office 365 on his blog site, and he does in-person training sessions and training videos about Office 365. There's also me, Mark Keane. I'm the voiceover guy and producer of this podcast. I'm also a Microsoft Azure technical specialist, PowerShell extraordinaire, and IT consultant, helping people move to the Microsoft cloud and consume it by helping them to make sense of it. This is a Need to Know podcast with Robert Crane and Mark Keane. It's all about the Microsoft cloud.
So we're back for another Need to Know podcast, and this time we're in 2016. So a very happy new year to everybody, and looking forward to the business opportunities that come with the new year. But just because it's new doesn't mean things haven't been changing and updating in the Microsoft cloud world. Probably the biggest thing that you should be aware of is that the new OneDrive for Business Sync client is now available. I'll put the link to that in the show notes. There are some limits around what it supports and what it can do, but it's a great first step in the direction of updating the Sync client. So make sure that you get that, download that, and start using it. If you also aren't aware, Office 365 Planner Preview is now available. I've got a blog post up there about how you can add it to an existing tenant. Remember that it is currently in preview, so you can get in there, have a play with it, see what it's like, but it's a bit of in between the SharePoint task and the full-blown Project Online server. So again, have a look at it. Easy to add in, worthwhile playing around with. Very much based on Office 365 groups. So if you're not into Office 365 groups, you probably need to go and have a look at that as well. Some other interesting things around retaining your OneDrive consumer bonuses. So if you've used the camera roll and got some bonuses over time with OneDrive, I'll give you the link there to make sure that you can retain those going forward, because Microsoft is changing the space available for OneDrive consumer, not OneDrive for business. And again, make sure that you are aware that unfortunately, the bad guys are sending out malware posing as Office 365 statements. So if you get your statements for Office 365 billing via an email or PDF, make sure that you check to ensure that they are coming from the right source, because there is some malware attached to that. Apart from that, again, what we've got here is that I've been doing some work around EMS, so I put some posts in there about the Enterprise Mobility Suite. Also been working on some Academy, on my online Academy courses, so please, by all means, have a look at those. I'll put those in the show notes. There is a new SharePoint online Level 1 course for you to have a look at. And as always, if you need to get in contact with me, you can do so on the Twitter at DirectorCIA. And you can also send me an email, director@ciaops.com. And also welcome anybody connecting to me using my Skype for Business address, which is admin@ciaops365.com. But with that, let's get into our very first interview for 2016. This one is with James Ealing and focuses on leadership. James, welcome.
Hello, Robert. How are you?
Back again. You must be a regular frequent flyer now on this podcast, which is great. Obviously, a lot to contribute. So why don't you let people know who haven't heard you before who you are and what you do out there in the real world?
So in the real world, I started Extreme Networks in 1999. So we've been running it for a little while now. We've grown the company to 20 people, I believe, and we're currently advertising for one person, so we'll be 21 hopefully by the end of the month. And I've sort of transitioned out of that. My wife runs that side of the business, and now I do a lot more entrepreneurial stuff. So I set up a business that does restaurant marketing, and that's now Australia and New Zealand's largest online marketing company for restaurants. And I've got a little side project, which is 4x4 Earth, which is a four-wheel drive website, and that is Australia's largest free and independent website for four-wheel drivers, and just about to tick over to 200,000 visits a month. So That's a decent old website.
So, quick question: why the restaurant business is a bit detached from the IT world? Are you a foodie, or you know, what made you get into that sort of vertical?
Okay, so I'm fairly slow at learning things and stubborn, which works out to be very expensive. Built some previous online businesses, which were just absolutely amazing. Like the technology we're using, we had an app probably 6 or 7 years ago that would track light aircraft in real time. So, and I remember the first time that we actually had a user, I think it was in somewhere like Finland, and I was just looking at it, and basically what it did was it showed you as they were traveling, and we watched a guy using Google Earth. You could see the guy, he taxied out of his barn onto the runway and took off. And we were doing that in real time. So we were watching a guy, obviously it was just a little line that was coming up, but you could see him taxi out. Now, amazing technology, and it literally blew people's mind when they saw it, but we never worked out a revenue model, and we never worked out a distribution channel for that, which was really quite sad. So that just withered because there was no point getting customers because they weren't worth anything to us. Mm. So one of the problems that we identified was that small businesses need websites. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, there's a lot of people who do that. So there was two things that we needed. One, we needed something that would differentiate us from all of the other website developers. And two, we needed a niche that we would do. So one day, we were thinking about it. We had some pretty cool technology to build the websites. We took a lot of the SEO that we learned from 4x4 Earth and created a process around doing that very cost effectively. And so we were just literally just looking for a niche. And we spent 2 years, and one day we came home. It was a Friday night, and we were going to have takeaway. Didn't matter what cuisine it was, didn't want pizza though. So, and I was trying to find a place that delivered to us. And I said to Tina, you know, I'll just find something. And I spent half an hour trying to find places, and I couldn't find one. And so Tina, in an effort to avoid some sort of emotional breakdown on my behalf, said, you know what, I will go and get the food. And I said, well, you know what, that really, you know, that ignores the whole delivered food thing, but yes, that's probably the best case. And she goes, well, seeing as I'm going out to get it, because I could not find anyone in, I spent half an hour searching online, I could not find anyone who would deliver to us. So Tina says, you know what, I'm going out, I pick Chinese, I know the restaurant, I just need to get their address. And so she searched for them, she found their website, and the website says, we deliver. And their SEO was so bad that none of the search engines knew that they delivered to our suburb. And Tina just said to me, you know what, I think you found your niche. And yeah, in the United States, there's 100,000 single location full service restaurants. These are people without marketing departments. Mm. So yeah, there's a lot of people there. There's a lot of people who've got that problem, and they pay, you know, they don't pay a huge amount of money to fix that problem, but they'll pay some money to have it fixed. We built a couple of free tools that we use as lead gen, so an online booking system, and that's done 300,000 seats, and we've just released an online ordering system, which goes head-to-head with Vimy. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and literally we're picking up leads all over the world, and we've got customers all over Australia and New Zealand. So, yeah, pretty exciting.
And I think, yeah, the big obviously advantage you've got there is the restaurant business is a pretty worldwide niche that you can focus on. And I think that in this day and age, that's the way you've obviously got to think, because it's so limiting just to be thinking about your own backyard. And if you do, you'll obviously get the leverage. So, I mean, you know, I think that's, you know, it's a great story. And I think that's a thing that a lot of people, no matter what their business, can take away. We're seeing a lot of people create their own home business or grow it or do something else and sort of scratch their own niche. So rather than ignoring those sort of pain points, there is a way to convert that into dollars potentially, and it may spin up into a larger environment, but may not. But again, there's so much that technology can solve. So very, very interesting. But we're here probably more to focus on a topic which I brought James in to give us his speciality on, is leadership. So I think that probably the best way to kick this off is to get James to let us know what he considers the definition of leadership. So what's your definition of leadership, James?
So, you know, I think it was Dwight Eisenhower said that, you know, leadership is getting people to do what you want them to do because they want it, they want to do it. So it's, I think that it's a two-part thing. It's about coming up with a strategy, and it's then communicating that strategy, wrapping the strategy up in a vision, in a message that makes people want to come to work, to do what it is that you want them to do. That's the really the big thing I find. It's also like my role in our company is I'm the caretaker of the company values, so which is a part of our culture, and so I will enforce ruthlessly anyone who deviates from our values, and reward as highly as we can people who really share our values. So it's about I think it's working on the strategy, which is something that so many small business owners don't do. And the two types of small business owners, those who have been running a business for 10 years and, you know, that they do what they're doing because they've been doing it for 10 years. And the thing that worries me is that they see, you know, revenue slip 5% 1 year, then 10%, then 25%. And then they're thinking, you know, what's changing? And by then it's probably too late to really be able to change. They haven't been thinking about strategy. They've left that bit, and you know they're going to get blindsided by a freight train. Then the other type of stuff is the startup. You know, someone who's just starting a business today, and the smart ones are starting with a blank canvas and looking at what the problem is that they're going to solve, how they can solve it, what technologies out there, and they're the ones coming up with a really good strategy, and they're the ones we see who are really crushing it.
So is leadership a talent or a skill, in your opinion? Do you are innately born with leadership ability, or is it something that, you know, can be taught and can be endeared, and then you can be as effective as, you know, like a natural-born leader, do you think?
I think everyone has a natural leadership style, and my natural style is laissez-faire. I'll tell you what we need done, and I'll tell you why we need it done, and I expect everyone to try and do that, and that doesn't, I find that doesn't work. And so I've looked at you, as a business owner, you need to be out there educating yourselves, you need to be reading books, you need to be trying to get as much information as you can about how to be a more effective leader, and how to run your business more effectively, particularly if you employ people. If you're playing with your own mortgage, that's one thing, but if you employ 10, I mean, we employ 20 people, that's a huge amount of pressure, so you need to perform, and because, you know, we don't want to let anyone go because of the fact that I haven't done a good job of the strategy or building a great culture or, you know, running the business. So, that didn't work with me. And you read books like of people like Patton, and Patton, he believed that he was destined to lead a great number of men in a huge and desperate battle. And he knew that his leadership style was not going to work. So most of the, in particular by World War II, his leadership style was already set. Most of that was acting. And if you watch the Patton movie, there was a bit where he threatened a padre with court-martial if he didn't come up with a prayer for clear skies.
Yeah, that and, was around the Battle of Bastogne, yeah.
Yeah, Battle of the Bulge, and you know, he wanted clear skies so that he could kill all the Germans, and the padre said, well, I'm not sure God would take too kindly to that, and he said, you'll come up with a prayer, there will be clear skies tomorrow, or I'll court-martial you. And his chief of staff said to him, sometimes the men don't know when you're acting. And he said, it's not important for them to know when I'm acting, it's important that I know when I'm acting. And but that was the whole thing. He led an entire US Army. His entire leadership style was an act, because his natural leadership style didn't work for him. And I think that's the big message. Some people say that they're uncomfortable doing that, and I think you just need to push yourself out of the out of your comfort zone. And because if you get out of your comfort zone, it becomes less uncomfortable, and then becomes comfortable being outside of your comfort zone.
Well, I think probably one of the secrets with leadership is that once you are given a leadership role or given the responsibility, that doesn't mean that that's all you do going forward. You're probably still going to have to be led by others. You're still going to have to defer to experience of others. So you'll still have the responsibility of leadership, but basically you'll still need to ask others for advice and keep learning and keep moving forward. So I think that good leaders certainly will take the responsibility, but that's not the be-all and end-all. They'll continue to grow, modify their style, learn, and they're quite comfortable in giving that leadership responsibility to others when it's required. I think, obviously, bad leaders are the people that once they get into that position, they maintain that and they try and use that as an excuse. So, for example, someone will come to them and say, well, okay, this option that we spoke about didn't work. What should I do? You know, I would like to do it another way because this isn't this. A bad leader would probably say, well, no, you do it the way that I told you because I'm the boss, rather than saying, well, hang on, okay, let's give that a try and let's see if we can work it in. So, again, it's one of those subtle skills, and I would think that you probably agree that leadership really is about people management, isn't it?
Oh, 100%.
And I think that the trick to it then is, obviously, is you're looking to get the most out of those people. And I think perhaps another thing that people overlook is that, unfortunately, everybody's different. You know, you've got to treat people in a different way, which means that if you want them to follow your requests or follow your direction, you're probably going to have to frame the request in a different way for different people, and that can be very frustrating. Whereas, you know, many people see leadership and say, right, we do this one thing, everybody, you know, can see this and we follow me. It's just not that simple, is it?
No, look, I think in a small business, the really big problem with it is that you're the leader. You know, your organization's going to have a culture whether you want it to or not. That was one of the biggest mistakes I made, was not actually taking responsibility for the culture. But because of that, it's very hard to find mentors. It's very hard to see people. You're always looking down on the people in your team. You never get the opportunity to look up and say, wow, I like that guy's leadership style. I love the way he did this. I love the way that she does that. I love the way that she communicates, you know, her values. We're not exposed to leadership. And so one of the things that I identified, I did an MBA at Mount Liza Business School, and in one of the case studies we looked at the Marines, and I was so impressed by the leadership qualities that they instill that I joined the Army Reserve as a officer cadet and went on to be an officer in the Army Reserve, literally so that way I can be exposed to leaders, and I can basically pick and choose the parts of the leadership styles of the people within the organization. And Army is one of its key capabilities is the ability to train people. So people get experience in seeing senior leaders the way they communicate, the way they come up with a vision, and not all of it's, you know, sometimes I think, well, you know, I don't think that would work in our organisation, or I'm not overly comfortable with that. But there's so much that you can, and that's one of the things that people need to do, is they need to be getting out there so that they can actually see leadership in action. And it then, because otherwise you're literally just going to be doing what you do and what you think, or you might try something that you've read out of a book. It is one of the big challenges, I think, in running a small business.
Well, I think part of it is that we all need to recognise, especially in business, that we work in a team. And again, the team, to achieve maximal success, obviously needs some direction, it needs support, it needs resources, but effectively, again, it will need the leadership to do that. And I think we're seeing that a lot of people seem to not, you know, see themselves as individuals. And again, a company that works well together, gels well together, gets good results together, like a sporting team, basically they're all in there to support each other. They're not in there to big note themselves or individuals. And that's where you get this this failure. And I think particularly a good leader is somebody who's able to pull all the team together and get them to support each other and work well, and basically understand that everybody has strengths and deficiencies, and that when somebody's down, somebody else will step in and assist them. So I think your military analogy is very true, and I think that's, you know, one thing that the military do, especially the special ops guys, do very well, is about, it's all about the team. You know, the rank isn't generally that important. We're there to do a job. We all need to support each other. We've worked well together. We've trained together. We have strengths and weaknesses, but we can overcome that to achieve our mission. So I think that what I see a lot of lacking in businesses is this team cohesion, this real, like I said, this bonding, this culture. But basically, you know, when somebody's down, when somebody has a problem, somebody will step in off their own volition and get in there and help. So I think that sort of culture, that sort of approach is driven by good leadership.
Absolutely. Yep. Yep. The fundamental component of it is communication.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And I think it's interesting, and we had a chat before we commenced the podcast, that we live in a world of, you know, when the Western world effectively of infinite communications. We've got 5 devices, multiple PCs, the internet's all around us, but we may be sending messages backwards and forwards to each other, but are we really communicating on a human level? So, I mean, everybody's had the experience of sending an email that's been misinterpreted at the other end because you used the wrong words or the wrong punctuation. I think that perhaps the people skills, like you've mentioned, is what we're missing in our very technology-dependent business, especially in the IT business as well, that, you know, going face-to-face with somebody and working, like I said, in your case, in the reserves with people and having to work in those teams to achieve set directives makes a big difference when it comes to, you know, getting results.
Absolutely. Yep. Yep. And, But I think the important component of that is setting the strategy in the first place. You know, there's a Sun Tzu quote that I'm quite fond of, that strategy without tactics is the long route to victory. Mm. But tactics without strategy is the din before defeat. You can be really good at what you do, but if you're doing the wrong thing, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, again,
if you're doing the right thing and you're not very...
Go on.
Yeah. If you're doing the right thing but you're not very good at it, you can get better at it tomorrow. And you probably, you know, you will get better at it tomorrow, and you'll get better every day, and eventually, you know, you'll get to the right path. It just takes a little bit longer. But if you're doing the wrong thing, you're doing the wrong thing, and it's, you know, you will die.
Yeah. What I was going to say, it's about being effective before being efficient. You can be efficient doing the wrong thing, and you can do that really well, but if you're doing the wrong thing, it doesn't matter how well you do it, you're still doing the wrong thing.
Exactly. And I think we're seeing that in the IT industry as you know, technology has changed all sorts of things. There's a lot of people who've still got a business model that was, you know, very, very popular and very, very successful 5 years ago, and that's not working anymore. Doesn't matter how good you are at doing it, you know, that's the world has moved on.
And I think that that's part of the challenge, obviously, with the leadership role, is that there are decisions that you're going to have to take or make or whatever that are going to be uncomfortable, that you're probably not going to be fully confident with, that you might struggle with information. But again, it comes back to that confidence that with a good leader, they know they can lean on other resources, lean on individuals, and bring their own abilities to the game. But especially in the technology field, with things changing as rapidly as they are, you just can't be across everything in all aspects now. And a lot of that means deferring to other experts, learning their knowledge. And I think where the IT industry, to an extent, has had its challenges, is that we're now in a stage where information is a fire hose. There are so many different options. It's really a case of being focused, and I think that's another good trait of a successful leader, is the ability to focus. You know, what is the next thing I need to do to succeed? There's all these other things that may help, like you said, but what is the very next thing I need to focus on? And without that focus, then that becomes very distracting. And I think if you're leading people, that they want focus as well. That's what they're looking for. They're looking to someone to say, right, this is the direction we're heading. If we make a mistake, we can adjust. But they're looking for someone to give them the direction and then support them in moving in that direction. And I think that's something that we are missing these days, especially in the technology field.
Absolutely. Role ambiguity is one of the things I really... I think one of my main jobs, you know, I want everyone to be clear, if you do this, that is a good thing. If you do that, that is a very bad thing. You know, this is what you are meant to be doing. In this situation, do this. A lot of people tend to be very uncomfortable when their expectations aren't clear. So that's another component of, you know, trying to build your team. And it feeds into all sorts of things like retention. Customer service, customer satisfaction. If the team's happy, customers will be happy. So it's all encompassing, and that's the thing that makes it interesting. Of course, is because there's no one thing that you need to do. It's all across. It's across the entire spectrum, making sure that the company's on the right path, making sure that everyone knows that they're on the right path, making sure everyone's paddling in the same direction. And it's tough in a small business because, you know, my definition is the owner of the small business, he's the person who does everything that no one else does in the company. And, you know, if you're running a company with only five or six people, there's a lot of things that people probably aren't doing. So you need to be the leader, you need to be the marketing person, you need probably the chief salesperson, the chief troubleshooter, HR, legal, accounting. All of those sort of things. Business owners have got a lot on their plate. It's not an easy job.
No, of course not. And I think that on that, that's where it came back to one of the things I mentioned initially, is that part of a good leader is to say, well, you know, I need to offload this. I need to get someone on to support me. I need to recognize that I can't do all this. I haven't got the skill set. I can certainly give people direction, but there are specialists who are better at this job than myself. And that's the confidence that, again, a good leader will bring to us. Okay, well, look, I stuffed up, you know, I didn't do the right thing, or I've made a mistake in direction, this is the way I move. But I think a lot of people seem to see leadership as being belligerent. You know, we just keep going, keep going, we keep going. If it's wrong, you know, it'll, you know, this is the way. I think that's not effective, and that's obviously going to make you, it's going to burn you out, because you're doing twice the amount of work that you should be doing to get the result. I think, again, a good leader is a smart leader. It says, you know, what's the most efficient way I can achieve the goals with the least amount of resources to get the maximum effect? And we're not generally seeing a lot of that. A lot of people, again, aren't taking that upfront time to consider the task, to do the planning, to work out their strategic goals and the tactics and how they're going to achieve it. They just tend to plow in the hope that they end up getting the result they want, because they maybe have seen other people do it. So again, part of the leadership is the confidence, you know, to sit down, do the planning and move forward, take everything into consideration, and then be prepared to adjust. And you're right, that's a hard job, but the way that you improve it, like any skill, is you practice it. So with that in mind, what would you suggest to people who are looking to improve their leadership skills? What sort of practical things should they be doing, be involved with resources that are out there in your experience? What do you think would work for someone who's looking to improve that skill?
So I think there's a couple of things that you can do. The first thing is to read. There's a few books out there. You know, people like Winston Churchill, how did he communicate his vision? You know, read some of the more theoretical things. Vern Harnish's work from Gazelles. He's done a lot of work on, you know, big, hairy, audacious goals, vision, culture. You know, try and work out, try and get a handle on those concepts.
And what about individuals? Have you got any sort of individuals that you'd obviously suggest that people, you know, read about, understand, look at their leadership style? You mentioned someone like Patton, but is there anybody else that springs to mind?
So Winston Churchill, and I think if you look at Winston Churchill, he was particularly in 1938, 39, 40. They were very dark days. Should Britain stay in the war, or should they surrender? It was looking fairly unlikely that they were going to be able to survive. And really, it was Churchill who was that one guiding light that, you know, we shouldn't give in to tyranny. Because that's the other component of it, is the ability to power on through adversity. In World War One, Churchill was the first Sea Lord, which meant that he was the minister responsible for the Navy.
That's correct.
And Gallipoli was his idea, and he lost his job shortly after the withdrawal, and he left thinking that he had made his that had been his public service
career.
Life.
Yep, that was the end of his political career.
That was it, over. And yet he stuck at it because he thought he had more to give, and you know the rest is literally history. Went on to be probably one of the best leaders of the 20th century. When you run a small business, you know how many small business owners have you know not been able to sleep because they're not sure how they're going to make payroll. How many you know you've got a legal threat, or
your competition
don't know
or something? Yeah,
you've just lost a major customer. Now, the next day you're going to go in. And this is where, you know, acting comes into it. You know, you've got all of this turmoil inside. You need to come along and you need to show that everyone, you need to be telling everyone that it's going to be all right. Because I've seen companies that have imploded because the leader has just, you know, I don't know what we're going to do. This is a nightmare. I don't know how we're going to deal with this. Now, that is not something that an employee wants to hear. They're thinking, oh, I've got a mortgage. If we go under, you know, then I've got a big problem. So I should start looking for a new job now.
Well, even if that's not true, it puts doubt in the employee's mind, and you might then lose a good employee because they don't feel stable in that position and they want to move somewhere else. So again, that's a ramification. Even if it's not true, by not, you know, having that persona and giving that confidence to others, that puts doubt in their minds, and then they might say, well, you know, is this the right place for me? And you could lose someone that's very, very key to your business.
Absolutely. That lack of faith, that worry, that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because of the fact that you aren't able to project a confident persona. And like small business, I remember probably about 10 years ago, one of the banks had an ad about, and it was about small business banking, and it was people on a roller coaster. And I think that running a small business is like that. Some days you can't do anything wrong, and literally the biggest question in your mind is, what colour Ferrari should I get? Because seriously, I've got this nailed. The next day, something happens, and you think, I'm not sure if we're going to be around in a month's time. The emotional roller coaster can be huge in a lot of businesses. And you need to be sort of mindful of how that's portrayed to the team.
I think
don't want them going on a roller coaster.
Exactly. So I suppose the resources, some of the resources that I'd point to, there's a very good book that I read recently called Extreme Leadership, written again by an ex-Navy SEAL, Jocko Willink. Now, he basically, the premise of the book is that a leader takes responsibility for everything. So if one of your team members makes a mistake, that's your responsibility for not training them. It all comes back to the buck stops with you, and you've got to be comfortable in dealing with that. On a practical side, I'd suggest that a good way to get experience in leadership, no matter what level of organization you are, even in a small business, is to get involved in community projects, volunteer. So that could be a community association, that could be a not-for-profit, that could be, you know, your local kids soccer team. Get involved with the committees, get involved with organizing and leading that, because A, they need the resources, and B, that's going to give you that experience to take on responsibility, work with others who can be very, very different from yourself and work in very different businesses, and that will give you some very, very hands-on practical experience when it comes to leadership that I think will apply basically anywhere. So at the end of the day, I think you can read all the books and you can do all that sort of stuff, but you really need to practice it so you can execute it. And the best way I've found with the least risk is generally to get involved with not-for-profits, community organizations. There's plenty of places that most people are involved with today that they could volunteer their time and their expertise and get some experience, especially with leadership, without any effort. So I think what we don't see is more people taking this responsibility, stepping up and helping when there's no requirement for reward. I think that's what would, again, make some great skills in leadership. And I certainly recommend that to anybody who would come to me asking for how do I get practical experience in leadership. I mean, does that sort of resonate with you as well, James?
Absolutely. I think you need to be getting out of your comfort zone and doing things, because there's plenty of opportunities to show leadership in all sorts of areas, because it's a fairly rare quality. The other thing I was going to say is get a mentor or two. You know, find someone who is running a much bigger company than you, and say, you know, I would... And there's mentoring services out there. I think the state governments run them. My mentor for marketing for restaurants, she's a very successful business person, run significant divisions of significant companies in significant markets. And it's just really... I'm completely honest with her. I'll say, you know, this is the one part of my business that is just sucking, and I don't know what I'm doing wrong. And often she'll have the answer, and often it will just be talking about it, and she just says, you know what you need to do, don't you, James? It's like, yeah, I need to do this. But it's been having someone who, and you know, she's not even in Australia, and we probably talk, you know, once a year, once every 6 months. I'll catch up with her when I'm in San Francisco. But it's having someone, like, she's got no vested interest in the company. It's just an open and honest relationship where you can, because that's one of the other things, is a lot of people don't feel comfortable in airing their dirty laundry. It's low risk for me. She's not in my industry. She's not a competitor. And it's great because she's got, you know, 1,000 times more experience in doing this kind of thing that I'm trying to do. So getting a mentor can be hugely valuable.
And I think one of the ways that, again, this comes from, you know, the stuff that Tim Ferriss does. So what Tim Ferriss talks about is how to find these sort of mentors, again, is get involved with an industry association where these sort of people come together. So he volunteered his time at a networking association in Silicon Valley that all these top CEOs were part of. He would be at the desk signing them in and, you know, setting up chairs and tables, but he made sure he did his job better than everybody else, because most people see a volunteer job as, you know, trying to do the minimum amount of effort. He looked at the other way, doing the maximum amount of effort, making sure that he was known to all the people, greeted them, knew their names, and then had a big impact on them. He had contact with them, and then that's given him the leverage, obviously, to have the mentors, but also the contacts he has to grow what he wanted to be. So again, I think that there's a lot to be said for getting involved in those sort of organizations, but that's not the end of it. As with anything, it's all about hard work. I mean, the idea is the more hard work you'll put in, the luckier you get, the more opportunities you get. And that again applies to things like leadership as well. It's not going to come and tap you on the shoulder. It's not going to come by you reading somebody's blog on a page or necessarily listening to a podcast. You've really got to get out there and experience it, and then when you have issues, you go to a mentor, you seek the solutions, and you move on, you learn and you grow. And that's really what successful leadership's about. And I suppose the more out of your comfort zone, the more stress you can put yourself under, the quicker you're really going to learn. And I think that's, you know, if you want a quick road to leadership success, that's what you need to do. You really need to step out of that comfort zone and stress yourself, and you certainly can do that with a minimum amount of risk, looking at some sort of, you know, not-for-profit association. And then again, those learnings you can bring in back inside your business. So I think there are plenty of opportunities out there. It's just a matter of people stepping up and taking them, aren't there, James?
Absolutely. One of the other skills that I think is really quite important is an old skill that I don't think actually gets taught anymore at university or anywhere really, and that's oratory. You know, the ability to construct sentences in a way that resonates with people. And I know in my I've bought a couple of books on it, and when you talk oratory, a lot of people think, you know, Winston Churchill, because of the way that he spoke so eloquently on the radio. And if you actually listen to his broadcast, he doesn't actually speak well. His presentation is not great. But the way that it's what he says is just so powerful, and so emotive. It's one of those, and I've seen people who have studied, who have learnt it, and it makes a huge difference. And particularly if you're, as a part of your leadership role, you're probably going to have to present in front of people. It makes it a lot easier if you feel comfortable in the way that you're packaging up that message. It's a lot easier to be able to do that.
I think the skills I would again suggest are, they say that readers are leaders. So again, you need to read more if you're a leader. You need to also write more. So again, there's plenty of opportunity to write documents, write a journal, write a blog, share your thoughts, but you need to write it down. So writing down helps you get it out of your head, put it onto paper, and that process improves your ability to present information to people. And the third option, obviously, once you've got those two, is the ability to go and present that and get in front of people and be confident to do that, because not only is there the skill of what words come out of your mouth, it's also your body language, the way that you present, the way that you engage people is a huge mark of success. And again, there are plenty of opportunities to do that. There are things like Toastmasters and Lions Clubs, but again, we point back to industry associations. If you have an opportunity to go and present at one of these groups, if it's only 5 minutes or 10 minutes, that's what's going to make a difference. And I was very lucky, now that I look back on it, my first job, they required us to get up once a month and give a presentation on a technical topic we learned during that time. And I can tell you, it was very awkward, it was very bad, and it was very nerve-wracking. But now that ability certainly pays big dividends. And I agree with James 100% that that's certainly going to give you that confidence to be able to get up in front of people and be able to lead them, and most importantly, inspire them to see your goals and to move with the same vision that you're trying to achieve. So again, in summary, I say, you know, you've got to read more to start with, you've got to then write more, and then you've basically got to present or speak more. And I think there are plenty of opportunities that people who want to put the effort into can certainly start doing that. But if they do those three points as a starting point, I think that's going to give them a great base to build leadership on.
Absolutely. And I think the first step is to realize that it's a skill that you need to develop. And getting out there. Because a lot of people, they don't realize that, you know, they think that being the business owner, you know, that's it. but it's really just the start of the journey. And then, as we said at the start, the making sure that you're doing the right thing. I think, you know, people need to be reading. You need to have some sort of technology journal, whether it's something like TechCrunch, or TechCrunch is a little bit sort of poppish and faddish, I think. But you need to be able to, part of coming up with a vision is you need to see where your company is going to be in 5 years' time. There are some people out there who should not be thinking about where their business is going to be in 5 years' time. It's, is there going to be a business in 5 years' time? Because I think there's some industries that potentially will not exist in 5 years, or will be a tenth of the size that they are. Now, if you're in one of those industries and the amount of work decreases by 90%, what does that do to your revenue numbers? Is that an industry that you want to be playing in? Is now the time that you should be exiting your business?
It's very interesting because, obviously, the technology changes a lot of things. And again, you know, there's that famous quote that, you know, what's the biggest hotel chain in the world? Airbnb doesn't own a hotel room. Biggest, you know, car rental taxi company in the world, Uber, doesn't own a taxi. So that model's changing. And one of the things that I read recently that really makes you think is that even now the big banks are under threat because there's a developing undercurrent of peer-to-peer lending. So people, again, pool lots of people together with small amounts of money, then loan it out all via the internet without the need for the bank. And the banks are becoming very, very concerned that they're losing a large matter of their income from these peer-to-peer learning. And it's like you look at it and you think, such a huge institution such as banks, which have been around since human beings effectively, now is being, you know, completely disintermediated by, you know, technology and people being able to communicate and share funds so quickly using something like the internet. And that's where you need to look at it, extrapolate, you know, if they're not immune, then the industry I'm in is not immune either, and what changes are likely to come. And the other side of that is, if you're a smart operator, a leader, as you would say, you'd be looking at, well, where's the opportunity? If it does change, can I take a leadership role in this and be out in front and obviously, you know, take advantage of that? So again, as much as there are, you know, threats, there are opportunities as well.
And I think, and I've spoken about it before, but, you know, the biggest change that we're seeing is that the rate of change that we're seeing is changing. And we, for some people, that's going to be very, very painful. For other people, like, it's just about looking at where the opportunities is. There's never been a better time to start a small business, because the tools that you have got were no one even conceived a small business employing three people would have access to that kind of technology 10 years ago.
And access to the market they've got now.
Absolutely. You would see that, Robert, you know, with all of the things that, you know, Azure provides, all of the things, you can get things for, you know,
pennies,
$5 or $10 pennies a month, you know, which in the old days would have been a $10,000 investment. Now, how does a small business that's been going for 30 days get a loan for $10,000? They don't, unless they borrow against their house. So if you don't own a house, you're not going to be able to, and that's a huge barrier of entry. That has been wiped away now, because you now have access to technology on a per-user, per-month basis. And the technology is just staggering, the choices that you have got now. And you pick the right parts of it. You work out what the strategy for your business is going to be, the industry that you're going to play in, and this is how people are going from, you know, they're building these unicorns, these companies with billion-dollar valuations. The number of these unicorns is increasing because it is easier to do that. And banking, I mean, what has banking done in the last 15 years? What's the biggest thing that they've done? They've done internet banking. Like, that's internet 1.0. And we're probably up to internet 3.0. So you're completely right. These guys are just moving too slowly, and their business will be fundamentally destroyed. Now, obviously, that's probably going to take time, but look what Uber's doing.
Yeah, I think
destroying the taxi industry.
Well, I think the big thing is, the analogy I point to is, most people think the world's moving linearly. So if I wait 2 days, it's two times what it was, you know, that initially. The world's actually moving exponentially, which means it, instead of being it 2 days out, is actually x squared, not 2x. And the further you get out, the bigger that change is. So once you begin to appreciate that the world's changing exponentially, then you can deal with it. But unfortunately, most people are still living in this concept of a linear world, and they just keep falling further and further and further behind. And the risk is, at some point, you just can't catch up. It's just too much effort. It's too much expenditure, too much to actually move forward to be current. And that's what we're certainly seeing in the technology field, is that, you know, what can be applied almost immediately for very little dollars can give people the impact that a very large business had and took months to implement. Now, that's a game changer. Like, as you say, there's just so much to do. But again, most people, again, they don't appreciate that they need to be at the forefront. And I think part of it also now is that, as we talked about with good leadership, it's about focus. You can't do everything. You need to pick your niche. You need to work out, you know, what you want to expend your energy on, because you can't spread yourself thin, because you're just going to break, because things are moving too quickly. You really, really have to focus. And that's where good leadership comes in, making those decisions. You can certainly adjust down the track, but you need to make those decisions rather than dithering and saying, oh, we'll get better. Hopefully it'll pick up. Maybe next month or next 2 weeks or next quarter we'll see an improvement, as we've seen recently with PC sales. PC sales just keep falling off the cliff year after month after year after month. And it's like, you know, the message is there, is mobile devices outsell PCs 5, 6, 7 to 1 now. You go to most IT companies, say, have you got a mobile strategy? What's your mobile strategy? How does that work? And they just look at you blank, oh, we haven't got one. So again, that's yep. what we're, they're the changes we're seeing.
And it, like, things are changing. I, you know, 12 months ago, before I got out of bed, I checked email. Sometimes now, and I'll still spend, you know, half an hour on a device before I get out of bed in the morning. Sometimes I don't even get to check email now until I get to work, because I've got the news that I need. I've checked the social media that I need. It's interesting. These things are changing really, really, really quickly.
Yeah, so even email, which we consider modern, is a priority set by somebody else. Somebody's sending you an email in your email you need to deal with. Where social media is, you pick who you want to choose, or the algorithm chooses what's best based on your viewing habits. Again, this is another fundamental change. We only need to receive the information which is most relevant, not information that others believe is most relevant and they will send us. So again, this is the change that needs to be made, and a good leader will adjust to that environment as they move forward, because it is going to change. And that's another aspect, I think, of good leadership, is appreciating that, you know, the situation, the people, the mood does change over time. Well, I think we're going to have to look at rounding it up here, James, because we could go on all day, and both you and I probably haven't got the time, and the listeners haven't got the patience for us to go on non-ending. We can certainly do another episode, and we'd like people to give us feedback. But probably a good way to round this all up is if you can basically give us a summary or your thoughts on, you know, a way to approach effective leadership, especially from a small business technology company. What's really your simple, straightforward method or message about leadership in this environment?
The first thing is, you've got to accept that that's your job. As a small business owner, being the leader, that's your job. It's not something that you can outsource. So whether you're comfortable with that or not, sadly, it is one of the key differentiators, I think, in small business success. A good leader sets the path correctly and is able to get people to follow them down that path. So you need to take responsibility for that. So you need to start thinking about, you know, are you on the right path? And so being a member of, you know, being seen as a leader within your industry, networking with other leaders in the industry, and then, you know, working out how you work on your leadership style. So you need to read. I think that that's really important, and try and get a mentor. They're the big things that I would do. And you know what? Everyone, like, I don't get it right. I make lots of mistakes. But, you know, we have a culture here that embraces failure. Because if people aren't making mistakes, then they're not really going hard enough. They're doing what they did yesterday and what they're really good at. And you know, that's yesterday's business, not today's, and certainly not tomorrow's, and I'm concerned about tomorrow, not today.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that's the big thing that you think that you need to be thinking about, I think.
Cool. All right. Well, for those people who do want to get in touch with you, James, find out some more information, what you do, your thoughts, recommendations, what's the best way that listeners can get in contact with you?
So just either through extremenetworks.com.au, send me an email, jeerling@extremenetworks.com.au, or we're just about to, I'm releasing a new podcast within the next 4 weeks, which is going to be around, it's entitled Sun Tzu for Small Business. And literally what we're going to be doing is breaking down the experiences of military leaders throughout history, and taking those lessons and then applying them to the modern business, because trying to create one of those resources that people can use to better use technology in their businesses, as well as, you know, having a really good understanding of that strategy, leadership, culture, all of those sort of things. So kind of packaging up some of the things that we've learned along the way for small businesses in a way that makes sense for them, and just, you know that more and more people are listening to podcasts now. It's just becoming incredibly an incredibly positive experience running a podcast.
Yeah, amazing to look on iTunes, just the podcasts are out there, just so many. And again, another recommendation, you put them on your car when you're traveling. Again, they're a fantastic resource. I certainly listen to a whole heap, and obviously that's why I like doing a podcast and getting people like James on to share their experience. Hopefully you've got something out of this. Please let me know if you have any questions for me directly. You can contact me on the Twitter @DirectorCIA. You can also visit the technical stuff that I do via blog.ciaops.com. But I think with that, we need to bring it to a close. I will again thank James for his time. I know he's a busy man, and it's great to be able to get his insights down on the audio here. And if you've got any questions, make sure you do send them through to him. But with that, I'll call to an end another podcast from the Computer Information Agency, and thank you very much for listening.
You've been listening to the Need to Know podcast with Robert Crane from CIA Ops. For guides on using technologies like SharePoint and Office 365, visit www.ciaops.com/publications. You can directly support this podcast by purchasing guides from the selection available. You'll also find templates there to use on your own SharePoint site to help your business get up to speed quickly. Reseller options are also available. All of this can be downloaded immediately from www.ciaops.com/publications. To provide feedback on this episode or to make any comments, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.